Hello, and welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. I want to welcome all of you to another episode of the show. On today's show, we're going to be talking about the recent Havoc convention that was held here in Shrewsbury, Massachusetts. I will have an update about Battle Games Magazine. I also have an update regarding the Crisis Point game that one of our listeners is going to be running soon, or perhaps by the time you've listened to this episode, we'll have already run it. I want to talk about the Seaward March one-day campaign that I ran, and then I have a couple other updates regarding the Dead Hampton Revolution and that promo contest that we had run. So first, I want to start off, and I want to apologize. You might hear some noises in the background. It's a very hot day today, so I have the fans going, and they're down low, so hopefully they're not too, you know, intrusive, but without them, it'd be pretty unbearable. That also means that I want to keep this to be a relatively short episode, shorter than usual anyway, because with the fans on low and I have one fan off, like I said, it's pretty warm in here. So even with windows open and all that sort of stuff, I need to get this done and then get the fans back on so I don't sweat quite a bit. Now, as I had mentioned, I have some news about Battle Games Magazine, and this is actually really good news. I emailed Henry Hyde a while ago, and I was curious if he had any sort of contact information for the people over at Atlantic who now own Battle Games Magazine. And I was kind of curious because I was thinking, you know, I'm not very happy with how they have things set up regarding the digital quote-unquote subscription, but really, as those of you who listen to the show know, it's really a licensing model. A licensing model that they don't tell you beforehand that it is. And so I was thinking, you know, I've talked about it on the show, and I critiqued that on the show and complained about it, and I've complained to the people who do the Exactly app over at Exact Editions. They're the ones who handle the digital subscription, quote-unquote subscription, of Battle Games Magazine. And I was like, you know, I talked about it on there, I talked about it on Facebook and on Twitter and all sorts of stuff. But I was like, I haven't really told Atlantic. And, you know, it's only right for me to let them know that I'm very unhappy about this, that I've talked about it on the show, that I've told you, the listeners, about it, and that some of you have agreed with me on it, and also that I would seriously consider not renewing my subscription because of how they handle the quote-unquote subscriptions, which really are, you know, licensing. And then I had heard from Henry, and he suggested that I do a little waiting because he had some news regarding the whole setup for Atlantic's quote-unquote digital subscription. And what it really comes down to is that Atlantic is backing off on a few things and is considering restructuring some stuff. So basically, he said that they've given him permission to sell PDFs of the magazine, of old issues of the magazine, on his own, that people can go ahead and, you know, they can purchase them and everything. These are all for issues that were put out before Atlantic took over. So that's issues 1 through 20 that, you know, you can go ahead and get PDFs of those through his own website, and he's hoping to get that up by early May. And then the other one is that Atlantic is negotiating about having PDF versions of Battle Games Magazine. I know that Henry has been pushing for that because he, I believe, agrees that a PDF version of the magazine would be a good thing. That's how he had done issues 1 through 20. So he apparently liked it back then. I would imagine still does, but, you know, I don't speak for Henry. I just speak for myself. But it is true that if it happens, it won't happen until issue 29, and that's going on. So, I mean, the next issue, Battle Games, is coming out, and then 29 or 30 at the earliest, probably closer to 30, issue 30, is when PDF versions might start to appear. So that would be really cool. I gotta say that, you know, I've talked about this before, the PDF format where you own the issue is the only fair way to do this if you are doing a subscription, because otherwise people who are digitally subscribing, yeah, you're paying less to get the issues, but it also costs less because the people publishing the magazine don't have to spend all that money on extra physical copies that require the ink, the transportation, the shipping, and all that other stuff. So it's cheaper to do it as an e-content, as an e-book, e-magazine, as it were. So they're saving money as well. But under the existing, not new, but under the existing quote-unquote subscription model for digital subscribers of Battle Games Magazine, you don't own any issues that you quote-unquote have bought. Whereas people who have physical subscriptions to it, they own that magazine, they get to keep it forever. But with the digital, as soon as you stop subscribing, you no longer have access to any of the content, as far as I understand, to any of the content that you had when you were subscribing. So if you started subscribing from January 1st, and then your subscription ends on December 1st, and December 2nd, you go to look in for an article that you really liked, you can't go and get anything because your subscription is up. And what that is it's a licensing model, not a subscription model. So Battle Games, you know, is licensing the content digitally and not having a subscription model. And that's all well and good, but they never said that. As a previous digital subscriber who got carried over, I was used to owning my content, and that's how it is with another magazine by another publisher that I digitally subscribe to. I get to own the issues. I get them as PDFs. And I'm very excited and very happy that Battle Games is moving on and that they are hopefully going to be going ahead with this PDF format of the magazine. So that's a lot of really good news, and as soon as we find out when it's going out, we will be sure to tell all of you. But like I said, very, very, very excited, and I just hope that the people of Atlantic see this as a good business move so that they sustain it and maybe expand it for some of their other titles. As I had mentioned, I also wanted to talk about Havoc. Havoc is a miniatures gaming convention. It's being held out in Shrewsbury, Massachusetts, and it's been there for quite a while. This was my first time attending Havoc, and one of the cool things about it is that if you don't want to play in any games, you can go ahead and go to the con, and it won't cost you anything. A visitor pass is completely free. That allows you to look around, allows you to buy a beer. Yes, they sell alcohol at Havoc. It allows you to go and shop at some of the vendors. A lot of vendors go there, and they're places you might not be able to get to otherwise, but you can get a good deal on things. They have, you know, like a really good bring and buy sort of sale and everything. So it's a lot of fun to go and do that, and also to see what games are being played. And then if you do want to play, you can then convert your free registration over to a paid one so that you can actually participate in some of the games. This year, I brought my friend Drew with me. Drew McCarthy, you may remember as being on the show a couple times, actually. He was on when we did a review of Bailey Records with their music to Game By. And that was a fun episode to do. And Drew's a guy who's pretty much into, you know, GW kind of stuff, Games Workshop. He has a Space Orcs, or as a now known Orcs. I think I'm the only one who still calls them Space Orcs, but a Space Orcs army. And he bought a bunch of Saga, and some of that is still in the way, but he's really looking forward to playing that. And once he gets his stuff assembled and painted, I will be placing in order to get some of that, and some of the other guys will also be participating in Saga. And Drew's played in some Black Powder games that we've had. Rich Clayton of the Boston Train Bands had come down to Battleground Games and Hobbies in Abington and did the Battle of Chelsea, which I covered on my blog, and I think he's also on the show. And Drew played in that along with a bunch of other people. So Drew's been coming around to historical gaming. And I said, Drew, you want to come? It's a day off. You can come. I'll drive. You come up to my place. It's free, so what's not to like? We went, and it was really cool. We got to see Court, who I've mentioned on the show before. And Court was there. And Adrian was there. It was really good to see all of them. And then Rich was there also, because he was running a game. Boston Train Bands was there in force, running some stuff that they're going to be running at Huzzah. And I got a good look around. It's a nice setup. They actually have quite a bit of space. It looks like an old kind of like church hall sort of thing over in Shrewsbury, right off Route 9. Really easy to get to. You go in and it's like open space, and they got two floors, an upstairs and then a downstairs. So plenty of room to go and play games and get things done. And you could tell that people have gone to this and that they go year after year. Everyone was very, you know, friendly and comfortable, and a lot of really interesting games there. Of course, the Hobby Bunker was there with a big booth. I love going to events that the Hobby Bunker is at because I've never been able to get up to the actual store. And they have a lot of really good wargaming product, so I get to see it when I go to these cons. I saw them last year at Huzzah. And another cool thing about them is they are one of the few vendors at a con that I've encountered anyway that will accept debit or credit cards. I don't carry a lot of cash on me, you know, a lot of bills and coins, but the debit card comes in really handy. Pay cash that way, you know, electronically. And it's tough, though, because you go and you don't always know how much cash to have on you when you go to an event like this. And, you know, you might need it for other things, like maybe you want a WIC meal or maybe you're registering or whatever. So then when you go in and looking, you might have less physical cash on you, but I've never met anyone who didn't have a debit card or something like that. So that, you know, you see something you want at a vendor, and you go, here you go, and you hand out the plastic. But if they don't accept that, then, like, what do you do if you don't get the cash? I guess you don't get it, and the vendor loses on the sale. And I can understand why vendors would not want to accept the plastic, because there's all those processing fees, so it hurts things and causes them to have to charge a little bit more, which means you're paying a little bit more. So ideally, if you had the physical cash, it'd be good. But like I said, not everyone can have that. So the Hobby Bunker, I couldn't recall if I was able to use my plastic up at Huzzah. And I was looking around, I saw a few things, and they had some Saga, and they had tons of stuff, a lot of really cool things. And I was going through, they have a nice collection of JR Miniatures terrain. And I was going through the terrain, and I was like, I see like four things that I really want. But like, if I bought all four, it was going to be over $100, and I don't want to spend all of that. But I knew I wanted to get something, and wouldn't you know what, I had no cash. So I was like, well, I don't see any signs that say they accept plastic, so let me go and ask. So I asked the guy at the booth, and he was really nice. He's like, oh, yes, thank you. No, we forgot to put the sign out, but we got the sign. He's like, yeah, definitely. So I looked around some more. They had, I looked around in other booths, and I ended up getting a little, it's actually a kitchen, believe it or not, which I have pictures up on our Facebook page, and I'll put a link to that into the show notes. But it's a JR Miniatures American Rev 25mm, which works just fine for 28mm kitchen. It's an outdoor kitchen. It works with the JR Miniatures house for American Rev that I bought from Hobby Bunker back at Huzzah. So it was really cool. So I was able to pick that up. And like I said, they were just really nice. Everyone at the con was really nice. All the guys at the door were nice. The people running games. I got to see, you know, Rich, as I mentioned, and Mike Payne, who runs some really cool pulp stuff up at Huzzah. So I got to see him. It was really nice to see him again. And just kind of went around and everything. And a lot of really cool games. A lot of games that are similar to, in type anyway, to what I know I will see at Huzzah. And that is why I didn't register to play in anything at Havoc. Because, like, you know what? I'm going to Maine. I'm going to be playing these games in Maine. I'm paying to go play them in Maine. And since I'm going to be playing them up there in Maine at Huzzah, then I don't think I'm going to play here at Havoc. Plus, I wasn't really sure exactly how it was going to be. So for my first time, I thought, you know what, we'll go for free, see what we think. And then if there's something I really want to play, then can stay and pay for that. But since I had Drew with me, he had to get back because he had, you know, some stuff to do later on. So we couldn't stay too long. Plus, you know, I promised my wife that I wouldn't be gone forever, not all day or anything. And where we live now, it's, you know, it's like a nice 20-minute, half-hour ride up, I guess. So didn't really think I'd play in anything. But I did see a lot of cool games, and I think next year I might try playing in something. My only, well, two complaints, really, I guess. My only major complaint about it was, like I had said, it was kind of like an old church hall, so it had like this really old feel, like wood paneling and stuff, and it felt dirty. I'm not saying it was dirty. I mean, there wasn't like trash or anything all around or whatever and stuff, but it wasn't as nice, like, you know, when you go to a con and they have it at a hotel. Like Total Con, for example, at the Holiday Inn, you know, you go in to the Holiday Inn, it's so nice because, I mean, they have people paid to go and clean and everything, and it's all updated and stuff. And, you know, Anime Boston, the same thing in Boston. And you see pictures of people going to PAX East. And it's in the, like, I get that they're much bigger. But, like, Huzzah, right, Huzzah's a much smaller con up in Maine. Again, it's in a hotel, I get that. But it's so much nicer. And, you know, the point of going to one of these things isn't to be like, oh, look how nice the place is. The point is to go and have fun playing the games with your fellow gamers. and saying, hey, you know, that's a wargamer I know, and I know this wargamer and that wargamer, and they're really cool to play with, and we have a good time, and all that. So it shouldn't be like, oh, look how pretty the paint on the walls is, and oh, they have wood paneling, or oh, what color is this carpeting? And like, I get that, but at the same time, like, the place felt very old. It just had this really old feel to it. Like, it really needs to be updated. And maybe that's part of the reason why Havoc's able to go there. Maybe they get a lower rate for things, and that allows them to do stuff, because it's a very, very small con. I didn't count the number of people who were there, but when we were there, it was the middle of the afternoon on Saturday, which would imagine was a busy day. And I have to say that I think there are fewer people at Havoc than go to the Battleground Games and Hobbies annual Mega Battle. And the Mega Battle gets tons of people. In the past, they booked all of the main ballrooms at a nearby hotel and used that to play on a gigantic table. Literally from one corner of the gigantic ballroom all the way to the other. It had to be like 50 feet or so, and like, you know, 50, 60, 70, no more, 80 people maybe playing in one of these things. And I'm sure there were more people who went to Havoc and who were there, you know, on Friday or later on Saturday or before on Saturday or whatever. It must have just been the time that I happened to have been there. But I was surprised by the number of people. I thought there was going to be a lot more. There was a good crowd, definitely a good crowd. And like I said, the people were really, really nice. I just thought there'd be a lot more people. And, you know, that was my own misconception. Nothing I ever saw or was told anywhere said, oh, you know, we get like thousands of people or anything. But I just thought there'd be more. So hopefully next year, more people will be able to go and support Havoc and play some really cool games. And who knows, maybe, probably not, but maybe I can convince Adrian and Court to work with me to set up another game to run at Havoc. I think we're definitely going to try to run something at TotalCon. And anyway, Havoc overall impressions, it looked really cool. I had a good time. It was a fun afternoon. It was nice seeing everyone. And I definitely plan to try to go back next year. So, if you can, go ahead and check out Havoc. They have a website that I would strongly recommend that you go to. They're part of the Battle Games Group Boston. No, I'm messing that up. I'm sorry, guys. I'm having to do something I hate to do, which is double-check it online. Battle Group Boston. I'm sorry. Havoc is part of Battle Group Boston. That's who sponsors it and runs it. So you want to head on over to Havoc. havoc.battlegroupboston.org, and that has all the information about Havoc and stuff from, you know, this year and previous years, and they'll end up putting information up there for 2013. Actually, they got stuff up already. Oh no, not yet. I'm sorry. This is what happens when you record as you have to double check something. So anyway, havoc.battlegroupboston.org. Havoc is run and sponsored by Battle Group Boston, so be sure to head over and check it out, and I think you will like what you see. So let's switch gears a little bit. Mailbag. Mailbag is one of my favorite things to do because, as you know, I love conversing with all of you and communicating with all of you, and I have a lot of fun. I'm in a really long-standing now chess game on the iPad with one of you guys, and I gotta tell you, it's really hard because the first game, I'm just like, I'm gonna move this, I'm gonna move that, and I didn't really care, but like, I'm trying now, and I'm having a hard time. Like, I'm a really, really bad chess player, and I just like to play, but like, I go on, and I'm like, oh, crud. I don't know, he moved here, and what do I do? And I'm looking, and I stare at the thing, and I put it down, and I come back 10 minutes later, and I pick it up, and I stare at it, and I'm like, and then I write a little message. This is a much better game than last time. But it's really hard. One of the other things, kind of as part of Mailbag, but not really officially, because it's not like I haven't received an email or anything about this, it comes about as a result of this thing called ProtoPage. Now, ProtoPage is a cool, cool setup. It's a free setup, actually. It's protopage.com, and you go to it, and it kind of compiles, you know, RSS feeds and Google searches and Twitter feeds and, like, all that sort of stuff. So, and then puts it all on one page, and then you can either make it public for everyone to see, or you can have it where it's private and you have to log in and see it. So I set up a proto-page for myself so that I could track, you know, whenever people talk about Wargaming Recon, whether, you know, they talk about CWF Gamecast or, like, games that we cover and that kind of stuff, just to try to see where, you know, what kind of mentioning that we're getting. And then, like, of course, I have, like, some Twitter feeds on there, Sages or RPG, A-Wayne, I get you on there. I got Warlord Games, of course, and I got searches on there for, you know, CWF Gamecast and things on WordPress and, like, all over the place. And one of the things I happened to have was a blog search for Wargaming Recon. Just kind of curious who would be talking about it, and most of them didn't apply, and that's one of the downsides of this stuff. But one of them did apply, and I'm glad I did this because the person didn't say anything to me before that they had actually done this, but I knew they were going to. So Richard is a listener. Richard, how are you? And he lives over in the United Kingdom. He sent me an email, and I mentioned Richard a while back because I did a little bit of promotion for his Crisis Point event for Cold War Commander, which I gotta say, I wish I lived over near you because I definitely would be playing in this. I don't know anything about Cold War Commander, but the way that the newsletter was set up and everything, it looks so cool. And I gotta say, it's really affordable to be able to get into end of April that they're running it. And, you know, I talked about this and I talked about how it's set up and where it's being done and everything, but, like, it's just really, really cool, and it's so professionally done. Like, I've really enjoyed it. So Richard had told me that, you know, he really enjoyed the coverage that I did, and that he was going to name a commander after me. And I was like, that's really awesome. No one's ever done that, and I was really stoked. So one of the things that came up on ProtoPage was an article on his blog, The Land of Counterpane. And you can find it at thelandofcounterpane.blogspot.com. And the article that came up was The Land of Counterpane, Colonel Reinhardt's HQ. And, you know, at the top of it is a picture of the model of my HQ. And has this awesome camo on it. It's a tank. And it's this little blog post. I'm just going to read it. And Richard says, I don't think it's giving too much away to say that this command unit will be appearing in this month's Crisis Point game of Cold War Commander. It's a CO unit in CWC terms and will command a joint U.S.-Dutch battle group. Colonel Reinhardt is named in honor of Jonathan J. Reinhardt, the host of the Wargaming Recon podcast, who has very kindly helped to promote Crisis Point. So I want to thank you, Rich. I know that I posted on your blog and just said how awesome this is. Like, you know, I'm really, this is amazing. This is really, really cool. And I put it up on our Facebook page. I was like, hey, guess what? Look what one of the listeners did. How awesome is this? And the model looks amazing. It's just really well painted. I think it's like 6 millimeters, and how you got all that detail in on the camo is beyond me, because I couldn't do that. But the basing is just fantastic. The tank is sitting on this little square base, and it's painted to look like, you know, asphalt, kind of concrete looking. And then there's these two stone walls, and then on one corner there's this little bit of grass. And I don't know how you got those walls up, but, like, one of the walls has what looks like grass or maybe some ivy on it, like shrubs and stuff. And then there's, like, another grassy area next to it. You must have used, like, static grass or something. I'm not sure. But it's all superbly painted, and it just looks so amazing. I don't know how you did it, but it's really awesome. So I hope the rest of the listeners, as you can tell, I'm really excited about this. But I hope the rest of the listeners will go ahead and head on over to thelandofcounterpane.blogspot.com and check out all of Rich's stuff on The Land of Counterpane. He has a lot of things on there about Cold War Commander. And, you know, I spent some time looking around. I saw some of the terrain projects and everything. And, wow, man, I wish, first of all, I had half your skill. And since I don't, I wish that we lived a lot closer so that I could convince you to make some terrain for the Dead Hampton Revolution, because your stuff is, like, fantastic. I don't know how you got the skill, but it's just amazing. He worked on a motorway terminal junction, and then there's this awesome statue that he did really good work to give it a nice patina on it. He said the statue is a Bacchus, French general from the Franco-Prussian War, painted in dark bronze, a.k.a. Games Workshop's tin bits, or at least what they used to call tin bits. And then he washed it with a homemade verdigris glaze. And the thing looks fantastic. It looks like, you know, it's this actual statue that you found somewhere. It's been out for a couple hundred years, and you shrunk it down with, like, a shrink ray or something. But all the stuff on here is just really awesome. And it just, it's really, really amazing. So I'm looking forward to what happens at the Counterpoint event. Crisis Point, sorry. At the Crisis Point event and Cold War Commander. And Rich has said when it's all said and done, he's going to give me an after-action report, which I will gladly share with all of you. So as you can tell by the the laughing and giddiness in my voice, I'm really honored and very appreciative to have, you know, this commander named after me. Who knew I would ever command a joint U.S.-Dutch battle group? And I'm a colonel, too. That's amazing. So thank you very much, Richard. I really appreciate it, and you did a fantastic job on the model. It's splendid. It really is. So I hope all of you guys will take a chance to head on over to landofcounterpain.blogspot.com. Check it out. Of course, we will have links in the show notes for all of this. And speaking of gaming, and I have no way to segue into this, but I want to talk about the C-Word March. C-Word March was the one-day campaign that I thought would be really cool to try to run. I had mentioned that I read in, one of the usual gaming magazines. I want to say War Games Soldiers and Strategy, but it may have been War Games Illustrated. But one of the wargaming magazines, of which there are many, and I really enjoy most of them. But one of them talked about running a one-day campaign, and it used kind of like a saga sort of setup for this one-day campaign. I thought, wow, I've always wanted to run a campaign, so it would be cool to do a one-day campaign. And you're thinking, wait a sec, you're running Deadhampton Revolution, which is a campaign, and you're correct. But I came up with the idea for Seaward March before Deadhampton Revolution. And so I worked on that, and I used Hexographer to make the maps and all sorts of stuff and do everything. And I finally ran it, and it went actually surprisingly well, considering I've never run an event like this before, and that none of us had played in a one-day campaign. So the basic setup was that I created this little write-up where the Union was marching on Atlanta. It's part of the March the Sea, which I'm sure you guys either are experts about or at least have read about in some sort of history class. And so the Confederates are, you know, they're pulling back and they're trying to defend their perimeter. And the Union's coming, but the Union needs more supplies because they're raising everything left and right. And they just need some more supplies. So what I had done was I said this would be perfect as a way to create a one-day campaign. So on my map, I have some Union lines, and there's a little town of Dalton and Dalton Heights and Southern Elms. And that's not right. I mean, two places, Dalton. Yeah, that's wrong. Sorry, that's an old map. But I named a bunch of cities, and then the rebel capital was Dalton. And so the rebels had this weapons factory, and they needed to protect the weapons factory because those crazy Yankees wanted to come and steal their guns and ammunition and cannons and all that sort of stuff. And then they wanted to go and, you know, march on Atlanta and kill everyone and burn everything to the ground. And dang it, those rebels weren't going to allow it. So that's how Seaward March was born. And Court and Adrian were kind enough to play in the one-day campaign. And what I had them do was really easy for one and not so easy for the other. So I basically followed what it said in the gaming magazine. And I had all the orders written out for one side. And I said, you know, first you're going to do this, and you'll get so-and-so by day number whatever, and then if A happens, you're going to do this, but if B happens, you're going to do that, and if C happens, this happens, and so forth, and I mapped out what they were going to do. Then I had the other side have to create all the orders, and the tough thing was that they knew what the general objectives were that I believe it was actually the rebels I had, how to make their own, orders. So they knew the Union was coming, that the weapons factory was important, that Dalton was important, and what the Union had to do. But they didn't know how much, what the force organization was going to be going to each location. They didn't know, like, oh, if the Union goes all the way straight to Dalton, like, how they're going to get there, because there was a bunch of different roads, and all that sort of stuff. So it made it kind of difficult for them to decide what to do. And also, it turned out I wasn't entirely clear in my instructions. The rebel commander thought that they only needed to decide what was going to happen on the first day, and that at the end of the first day, based on what was going to happen, on what the results were, rather, that then they could make decisions for day two. And so we didn't realize this until after the first day happened, and I was like, oh, wait a sec. That's not how it's supposed to go. I'm sorry. I messed up. So then they went through and they planned everything out, and they're like, you know, it's kind of hard, though, because don't know, like, on day four, what if this doesn't happen, what I tell them to do? I said, well, then you got to write, like, if it doesn't happen, they're going to do blah, blah, blah instead. And so then trying to figure that out was a little tricky. Also, it was a little hard for record keeping because I printed out the maps, which was really cool, and, you know, could write on them. But I think next time that I need some sort of, like, see-through, like, plastic or something so I could put them in and then use, like, a dry erase marker or whatever to mark on the map exactly where each one is. And then also, when I printed the maps, I forgot to have the numbering print on it. So, you know, like, we were having to refer to the hexes. They play, use hexes. But being like, hex over here is like four spaces southeast of mountain here. And whereas if I had the numbers printed out, it could have been like, hex number A4 gets moved, have the people moved from A4 to D9. Or, you know, like something like that or whatever. It would have been really easier and quicker to write down the orders. The battles themselves were kind of a mixture of things. We had a lot of small battles, but as you can guess, there was a pretty decent-sized battle over near the weapons factory, and then there were two battles where they kind of flip-flopped. One battle, the Union was grossly outnumbered. They had their cavalry and wagons that they had captured, and they happened to stumble into a large rebel force. So I'm sure you can guess how that went. And then later on, the rebels had something similar where they had a really small force and a larger Union force. So those two were, you know, they weren't balanced, and the players I could tell were looking at it thinking, what the heck am I supposed to do? There's no way I can win this. And I mean, yeah, I guess. But there's always hope, right? So I know war's not fair, and I know in a campaign you're not always going to have those even lines of soldiers marching across the tabletop saying, oh, I'm going to shoot you, and we're going to move here and stuff. And you're not going to have exactly the same number of guys. But this was a little, you know, extra uneven for those two battles. And next time, I think I need to try to figure out a way to rectify that. But all said and done, I thought it went really well, and it ended sooner than we thought. I expected that we'd be playing till like 8 or 9 o'clock or whatever, and we had started at 1 or 2. And we got done at like 6 or so. We played like 3 or 4 small battles and one large and one medium. And I got to give a lot of appreciation to both Adrian and Court for participating. And a lot of thanks to Battleground Games and Hobbies in Edmonton because they let us take up quite a bit of space to run this. And then, of course, I need to thank Court also because he supplied all the models and almost all of the terrain, all except some tents I had picked up. So he supplied all that. He's just so good about being just really nice about bringing his stuff and carting it over to the store so we could play with. And he was like, here you go, John. Put the stuff wherever you want. And you know, it's always weird, like, using someone else's stuff because, I don't know about you, but I'm always afraid, like, what if I accidentally drop it? Or what if something happens to it while I'm using it? I'm like, worried that, like, I'm going to break someone else's toys. And so I try to be, like, extra gentle. And I'm like, oh, you know, I get a little worried or whatever. Whereas with my stuff, I'm like, this goes here, that goes there. And, oh, he fell over, whatever, it's fine. But, like, someone else's stuff, I'm like, oh, I don't want to do anything to cause it to tip over now. Because, you know, you get it's not your stuff. You get worried about it. And if it's yours, it's like, whatever. But I was really appreciative. In addition, I had used something else that I picked up at Havoc that I had not mentioned. I picked up some Renedra tents, and I had looked at them online a while ago, and I thought, oh, these look pretty cool, and I should go ahead and get these. And I actually ended up getting them. They're dog tents, I think. And I picked them up. They're 15mm. I got them from Hobby Bunker, and I used them for the, you know, Seaward March. Briefly, I just want to talk about how I painted them, because I think they came out really well. And if you head over to the blog, and we'll have a link in the show notes, there's a blog article titled Seaward March Renedra Tents. And basically, I just what's really cool is I use the Quick Shade, Army Painter Quick Shade on them. So I primed them with Chaos Black, and then I went ahead and I actually painted on the Chaos Black because it wasn't sufficient weather for me to go out and spray yellow. But I primed them with Chaos Black, and then after they dried, I base coated them with Khemri Brown. And I know Games Workshop has new names for the paints, and we're going to talk about that in another episode once I can actually use the new paints. But old school name of Khemri Brown. It's part of the line of foundation paints. And then after that dried, I went ahead and I dipped them into the Army Painter Quick Shade. I have the Strong Tone. And then I let it sit for 24 hours so that it can fully seal and harden and everything. And the cool thing about Quick Shade is not only does it shade your models, but it seals them. So you don't really have to use like a varnish at all on them unless you want to. Like, I don't like a glossy look, so I hit things up with a dull coat, Testor's dull coat afterwards. But, you know, if you like glossy and you don't mind glossy, which I know is popular in the UK and not so popular here in America, but if you like the glossy, I mean, just dip them, or you can paint it on if you'd like, and you're all set. And so 24 hours later, they were all set, and then I just kind of highlighted them. I did a dry brush of Commando Khaki onto the raised areas, and then I did a more severe dry brushing of Bleach Bone, and then I hit a light dry brush of Talarn Flesh. Now, these are all Games Workshop colors, and that gave me, you know, this kind of brown-looking tent with stuff. And so we used them on the tables. It was pretty cool. I got to recommend Quick Shade. I talked about it before, but it was really cool. And, you know, I had a good time doing the one-day campaign. I almost wish that I had another GM running it with me, so that way I could have, like, one GM designated per side to help out. And, you know, just having me, it kind of slowed things down a little bit. Plus, I also had, you know, the Rebels having to make the decisions, issue their orders on the day of the event. So I think next time I will issue things in advance and have them, you know, the sides give whatever orders are necessary and then email them to me. And then I will take care of things and have it all set up. Just kind of make things smooth, a little easier. So that was Seaward March, and I definitely plan to run something like that again. Maybe next time American Rev or, you know, some saga or whatever, or come up with my own idea for a one-day campaign. Like I said, this was based off of one, or stolen maybe, might be better. This was inspired by, that's the polite term people use. It was inspired by an article I read in the Wargaming magazine, and it was, you know, a raid-type setup where the Union had to go get supplies and bring the supplies back to the Union lines. At the end of the event, I think it was determined that it was a very, very minor victory, as minor as you can get without it being a draw, but basically a draw at the end of the day for the Union, I believe. So it was pretty cool, and I think everyone had a lot of fun. And that was Seaward March. Now, I just got two other things I want to mention quickly. The first is an update on the promo contest. I hadn't talked about this in a little while, and that's basically because, one, I had forgotten that the deadline was so soon. It crept up on me with everything that was going on. And then also, there were no submissions, so I was kind of disappointed in that. I'm going to spend some time rethinking the contest and how we can make it work better so that you guys would be interested in submitting. I think maybe I had caused some confusion, where maybe people thought that you had to actually create the promo, which you did not. I had mentioned, like, if you wanted to, you could, but I think next time I'm just going to take that out and just be like, give me some ideas. So we'll see what I come up with for that and work on that and hopefully have a promo contest in the future that's better and faster and one where people would actually like to participate. And then the other thing, before we wrap up, is that I just want to give an update on the Dead Hampton Revolution. It turns out that Adrian and Court are both willing to participate in this. So Adrian is taking over as basically Great Britain, but it's Dead Hampton, you know, the motherland. And Court's taken the frontier colony of Glauland. I have New Dead Hampton, and we have one place left over, which I'm told someone else might be taking, but I'm waiting to hear from this person about whether or not they actually are. We decided that we're going to go ahead and use 10mm to get this done nice and quick and easy. Court has a nice connection with Old Glory, so we're going to be using Old Glory miniatures, and we place an initial order for the stuff. And the cool thing about Old Glory and about 10mm is that it's very, very affordable, and it takes, like, no space once they're all set. The stuff, you know, they're metal, and you get, like, a bunch on, like, this band of metal. It's like this strip of metal, and they're all right on there, and you just clip them off, and you go. And I think for like a regular thing of infantry, it doesn't include the command, but I think you get 100 soldiers, so you can figure out, you know, how many guys that would equal to real life. So some of that, some cavalry, some artillery, and we're all set to go. I've decided that in order for me to get my stuff done and to get it done nice and quick, I'm doing a really simple method. I'm going to take my guys. I'm going to, of course, you know, prime them black. And then I'm going to dip them into my base coat, which is probably going to be a blue. And then I'm going to dip them into quickshade. And, of course, shake off the excess. And then I'm going to do a very quick dry brush of a lighter color. And that'll be it. I might, just might, touch their hands and their faces with a skin color before I dip them. We'll see how I feel, because 10mm is really small, and I'm not sure how well I can do with that that small size. But I'm going to be dipping everything. Be like, blue, in you go. Shake off, you're done. Dry, oh, look, quick shade, in you go. Shake off, you're done. And, oh, dry brush, everyone, and you're all set. And that's how I'm going to get my regiments done, so that'd be done quick and easy. Maybe as games progress, and maybe as they do good, like the ones that excel, maybe they'll get nicer paint jobs as a reward. I'm not really sure. I know the others are going to spend a little bit more time. Court has some 10 millimeter that look amazing. They look as good as people's 15 and 28, so that I've seen. I don't know how he's done it, but he did a good job. And for me to do that, it takes so long. I love painting, but one of the reasons why my 28, my Perry Brothers 28 mil have not been getting done as much is because they're bigger, and like for me to get anything half decent just takes me longer. And I'm so busy these days. So the 10 mil should be good, because I'll dip and that's that. But as the events progress, we will keep you up to date on the Dead Hampton Revolution and everything. And then I do want to close out with just one really cool thing. You might recall that I am an editor for Troll in the Corner, which is trollitc.com. It's a gaming website run by Ben Gerber, and it's kind of focused on like role-playing games and that sort of stuff. So I'm kind of the lone wargamer in the mix. But I had done a review on there, and I did it on blog here on CWF Gamecast, about Hexographer. And I get emails from time to time about updates on the Hexographer website, because they have a WordPress blog where they keep everyone up to date. It's hexographer.com, hexographer.com. And they're owned by Inkwell Ideas, and they're the ones who have, you know, the WordPress blog. So on their blog, they had an article about recent, you know, reviews of their products and stuff like that. And they mentioned my review on Troll ITC, which is very similar to my review on CWF Gamecast. So I just want to do a quick read of what they mentioned on their website. So this is inkwellideas.com, inkwellideas.com, and they made a posting titled Recent Hexographer and Dungeonographer Reviews, and the really important one is the one in the middle. It says Troll in the Corner also has a hexographer review. Here's one section, and this is my review. More recently, I sat down and created a list of what I need of a map making program. It needs to work on Mac OS X, whatever incarnation I'm on at the time, line currently, be intuitive and easy to use for a noob like myself. It has to create square or hex maps with user-chosen terrain types and features such as roads, hills, cities, towns, rivers, etc. It has to be able to export the maps into a common image format such as JPEG or GIF or PNG or whatever, and has to be able to do that so that I could insert those images into a blog or print them out or whatever, and it has to be affordable. Finally, I say, I found a program that fits each of those requirements, Hexographer. So the people who own Hexographer, Inkwell Ideas, you know, they had this up on their website, and they mentioned a couple other reviews that are up there. I actually read the first one they mentioned, which is by Old Guy Gaming, and it's actually a pretty good review. So I would suggest that you head on over to inkwellideas.com and check out this blog posting, because you can find out some more about Hexographer. I've been talking about Hexographer here on the show before, and I talked about it on the podcast, and I believe episode 70 is actually when I started talking about it here, because of how it's helped me with Dead Hampton Revolution, and I also used it when I did Seaward March. I gotta say, if you're looking for any sort of map-making program that you can use on, you know, Windows machine, on a Mac, that's easy, that lets you do hexes and have all sorts of different stuff, Hexographer is really the thing that you should be using. It's pretty affordable. It's not going to, you know, rob the bank or anything. You can get the full version, the aka Pro version. It's on sale for $24.95. That's 20% off. And that gets you everything. It allows you to run it locally from your computer, so you don't need an internet connection. And you just get access to all sorts of stuff. It's a really well-done program. I highly recommend it, and I am grateful that the people over at Inkwell Ideas link back to the review I did. So I hope you go ahead and check it out, hexographer.com, inkwellideas.com, trollitc.com, where I do a weekly column, comes out every Thursday on gaming, wargaming usually, but tabletop gaming, and you can usually find other articles that I put out during the week. So I want to thank all of you for listening to this episode. It's a little shorter than usual, and I appreciate you taking the time to listen and listen to me talk about Havoc and Battle Games and Dead Hampton Revolution and Crisis Point, Seaward March, and my little update on promo contests and Hexographer. We will be back again, of course, with another new episode in due course, and it looks like you guys are enjoying the recast series, which are older episodes of the show that I pick out and I re-release, because I did recast number one, which was the first ever holiday gift guide, and recast number two covers cases for collectible miniatures like D&D minis and War at Sea and that sort of stuff. So you guys seem to have enjoyed those, so I'm going to continue to do recast episodes as the need arises and time arises. So I hope all of you enjoy that. And as you can tell, the heat's getting to me. I'm stumbling over my words and everything. So that tells me it's time for me to close out the show, put the fans back on, and pop a movie in, and listen to some music, and get some reading done, and work on Dead Hampton Revolution. All those wonderful things. So thank you as always, and I hope you will, of course, keep on gaming.
Say a pirate's life for me, but pirates of what century? Are there corsairs and sailing ships, or torrent trading little ships on P2P or the high seas? Will there be blood or C&Ds? Don't make Anonymous upset. Thank God I haven't crossed them yet. Are they peg-legged with parrot pets? Or basement rats afraid of sex? Somewhere I think they missed a step. They don't look like Johnny Depp. Yo ho ho, is there nowhere left to go when the booty calls? Does anybody know? Yo ho, sail away, set a course for Pirate Bay, 'cause the last pirate's fighting with the MPAA. Yo ho, is there nowhere left to go when the booty calls? Does anybody show? Yo ho, sail away, set a course for Pirate Bay, 'cause the last pirate's fighting with the RIAA. Will nothing stop them in their tracks? God knows they've tried to patch their cracks. DRM they can't decrypt. Maybe a disc that can't be ripped. There's blood on everybody's hands. Shit, I think we killed the fan. Yo ho ho, is there nowhere left to go when the booty calls? Does anybody know? Yo ho, sail away, set a course for Pirate Bay, 'cause the last pirate's fighting with the MPAA. Yo ho, is there nowhere left to go when the booty calls? Does anybody show? Yo ho, sail away, set a course for Pirate Bay, 'cause the last pirate's fighting with the USA. Yo ho ho, is there nowhere left to go when the booty calls? Does anybody know?
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Axis and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com. This recording is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew M. and Court N. for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.